accession number 21276, reel 5.
Jeff Eason, reel 5. So I think we've just dealt with Pete Bitt where you got your military medal.
Yeah.
Right, and that was in Aston, which was in where?
Pardon?
Aston was in Birmingham. Belgium, was it?
That was in Belgium, yes, in Ypres.
Right, yeah.
And Ypres surprised me, you know, because I don't know whether you've seen photographs of the main square there, but when we were there in 1944, it was difficult, almost impossible to believe that all the buildings in that place were only about 20 years old.
Yes.
They'd all been rebuilt, exactly. Phenomenal, it was incredible. The cloth hall and the church and everything. Yeah. Absolutely incredible.
Because, yeah. I mean, that this was the, you know, I mean, for these areas which had seen fighting in the First War,
I mean, there was nothing there in the after the First War.
Yeah. Did you talk to any of the local people?
Oh, yes. There was a chap there, Jock, we got friendly with. For obvious reasons, a Scotsman. Mm-hmm. He was a gardener of the War Graves Commission, and the Germans had allowed him to continue and look after him. He'd not been troubled at all, he said.
Amazing. Yeah. So where did you go on to from Ypres? Or let me ask you, I mean, you met Montgomery, didn't you? What did you think of him?
Well, I'm bound to say we were all impressed because he gave a talk afterwards. And I can't remember all he said, but it was most impressive display. And one remark I remember, he says, "I'll put you over the Rhine," he said, "there'll be nobody there." And there wasn't. Yes. It was astonishing. I mean, I'd never met him. I didn't know anything about him then. It's only later that you read his biographies and find out what a funny fellow he was in some respects. But I was very disappointed to read his autobiography. He gave no credit to anybody for anything.
Really?
No. He'd had all the transcripts from these Omega Enigma transcripts. He'd had all that benefit of all this this spy stuff. Never made mention of being told or any of it. I was disappointed. I thought, well. And as for his chief of staff, who propped him up all through the campaign, no, treated him like dirt after the war, which is a shame.
Yeah.
Talk about feet of clay.
Yeah.
Couldn't
have done it on his own, could he?
Yeah.
So after Ypres, went on.
We went on into Holland, yes, and that incident I told you of with the farmhouse there. There were several others that I... Chronology is a sort of thing that... It's difficult to recall the sequence of events sometimes, but there were things...
You were in Holland for a while, were you?
We were there some little time. It was during the winter, and... Yes, we in the unaccustomed position once of standing in fixed positions, which is unusual for us, and more alarming because we had no infantry round us at all, and we were very vulnerable, and it was a dangerous state of affairs, as far as we were concerned, and didn't like it at all. Didn't like it. At one point, the Germans were, 50 yards away, I suppose. We were all both in the same village. And you had to keep your head down, another way.
Yeah.
One or two fellas got caught with snipers.
How did your troop work then?
Pardon?
How did your troop work? Because how many tanks would you have in a troop?
Well, three tanks in a troop.
Yeah.
Three troops in a squadron. And three squadrons in a regiment, plus the headquarters.
Right, yeah. So you would have your the three tanks would have one recce vehicle, would they?
then no, there were two of us to the squadron.
Right. So yes. Nine tanks. Yes. There were two refugees.
Yeah. And
so your orders would come from
the squadron leader, as a rule. Yeah. Yes, as a rule, or anybody else who wanted anything doing, you know, or did I know about so and so, or. Because they could always get hold of me. It was even better than mobile phones. I mean, we were always on the radio anyway.
Yes.
So we were always accessible.
So you must have got to know sort of each of the tanks and the tank crews in a way.
Well, I knew them. I knew them by their voices, but not by their names. You see, I never saw them, except when perhaps at weekend or something. Mm-hmm. I never got to know them intimately,
right.
Because we. Unlike infantry, we didn't pass the time together, you see. We were all dispersed, scattered.
Yeah. So I suppose, you know, you got an idea of the particular characters of the crews.
Oh, yeah.
How would they identify themselves?
Oh, they'd all got, we'd all got, oh, Lord, what do you call it? Mine was Baker 7, call signs.
Right.
They'd all got their own individual call signs, you see. So you knew who was talking.
Right. Mm. So it must have been, I mean, you would feel it as much as anyone if a crew were lost or...
Yes.
So if a crew somewhere injured or killed, then they would be replaced, would they?
As a rule, yes. After France, we didn't have so many casualties, I'm happy to say, because there were no sort of great stand-to battles.
Right.
They were all localised shootouts, like Aston, you see, and there were no big set-piece affairs. And we were, for the most part, we were just sweeping up. Remnants, I suppose.
And remind me, was it Sherman tanks you were using?
We were in Comets now.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. When did you go into the Comets?
When we went back after the Ardennes to Ypres, we got the Comets.
Right.
And
were they very different?
Oh yes. Oh yes. They were much more businesslike.
Really?
And of course, one of the advantages from our point of view was they were so much lower on the ground. The Shermans were about 10'6". You see, the Comet, I doubt, was much more than 6 or 7 at the very most. And there's not so much of you showing. You didn't advertise your presence so easily.
Yes.
And
were they quicker or slower?
In terms of speed, probably not much in it. But the first Comets we got, we had to do some modifications or something, and it involved travelling between Ypres and Amiens. I think it was Amiens. In France, and the military police wanted to look in, and we said it was security barred, they couldn't. And what we were doing was smuggling tobacco, you see.
And what modifications were made?
I don't know, I can't remember now. Some fiddling thing that hadn't been put in or... something had been omitted. I really can't remember now, but there was some trivial mod that they were able to do in the local workshops anyway.
Mm. Were you there? Were they each there for long? Or?
No. A few hours, that's all. Nothing much.
And then from Holland, you went on where?
We went on to Germany.
Where did you cross?
And I remember... Oh, it was a bit later on, though. I remember coming across a house, quite a large house, with a bathhouse in the back, attached as an extension at the rear. And it had got one of these solid fuel boilers. And I hadn't had a bath for 6 weeks. And I lit this thing and got it going, found out how it worked, filled the bath up with lovely hot water and got in. And they started shelling, and I thought, to hell with it. And I stayed there. Yeah.
This was an abandoned house, was it?
Well, there were nobody in anyway, yes.
Yeah.
It was empty. But you get blasé, you know. Probably do silly things, but there it was. I say I hadn't had a bath for 6 weeks, so it was a blessed relief. Yeah.
So where did you cross into Germany?
Went over the Rhine at was it Wesel? It was a place called Wesel. I remember seeing mountains of smoke boxes on our side. They'd lit this smoke to conceal what was going off, you see. Yeah, and over the other side, the shelling had been so intense, we had to send bulldozers over first, couldn't get through the rubble. Yeah.
Did you see any opposition?
No, there was no opposition, as old Monty had said. There was nobody there at first, no. But there was as we went, I'm sure it was Wesel, a place called Wesel. There was an old lady came out of her house and Becker's in agitated. And we went and had a look. And in the cellar there were some German bodies floating in the cellar. So I left it.
She wanted you to take them out, I think.
Yes, would we? That was the gist of it, yes.
You can see her point there, can't you?
Yeah, well, I wasn't too interested.
No. Right. So you went on into Germany, so it was all fairly heavily damaged, was it?
Oh, it was. Yes.
Which route did you go? Would you know where you went after Basel?
Well, we were always at the north end, all the top side, so to speak. We went towards Hamburg, and we sat on the River Elbe for 10 days, doing nothing to allow the Russians to get into Berlin. Had we got there first, there would have been no fighting. But the agreement at Yalta was that the Russians should be allowed to take this prize. And so we sat there just literally twiddling our fingers. Although part of the time I spent in an abandoned and damaged house on the River Elbe with an infantry unit doing radio link, you see. And the first night we got there, pitch black, and we were shown to a room with no windows in it, a couple of beds, just spring mattresses, no mattresses, but spring base. Yeah. And so we unrolled our bedding there, lay down. The next morning, somebody shouted, "Want a cup of tea?" And I was getting up like this. He said, "Don't get up!" And of course, they were across the river. They said, "You get your head blown off." So we had to crawl about on our hands and knees.
Which was the infantry unit then?
Oh dear, I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I really can't remember.
Yeah.
Can't remember.
So, where did you first encounter opposition? Did you go to Hamburg?
Well, no. Before then, we went over the Aller, and then the Weser, and then we came on to Belsen. And I drove in the gate there and turned round and drove up.
Really?
And wanted to be sick.
I believe that, yeah.
Just nothing we could do, nothing to be done.
No. So, did you have a reason for going there? Had they sent you
We were just going through there to somewhere else. We're up toward Lüneburg, I think it was, yes. Lüneburg Heath. But again, there was no real fighting at all, there was nothing. Nothing going off of any consequence. Sometimes felt the hair on your neck prickling up when you went past woods and trees. You wondered who was there and watching you, you know.
Did you have any encounters with German civilians? Or did you get any impression?
Not till after the war, really.
Right.
Not till after the war, no. We did see civilians about, of course, but they didn't sort of give any indication that they wanted to. Of course, old Monty had imposed no fraternization ban, you know, so which was pretty puerile and stupid, I think.
Mm. And you didn't feel any animosity, did you, towards them?
Not really.
Had you heard any rumours about the concentration camps?
We had, yes, and Belson, of course, confirmed it, that other than rumours, that's all we knew. Mm. Although later on, I did see a camp of, it was rather odd, right, but blimmin' disgraceful too. Up near Lübeck, there was a camp which had been hurriedly, evidently cobbled together. It wasn't a sort of permanent state of affairs. The barbed wire looked as though it had been laid in a hurry, and the left-hand side of the camp was full of RAF crew, air crew, who had been shot down and captured. And then there was a long line of barbed wire, and on the right-hand side, it was full of Russian POWs, who were obviously and patently starving. I mean, they really were skeletal. The blokes on the left in the RAF camp had got huts full of Red Cross parcels, but they never passed them across. Mm. I found that strange and sad. Mm.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. So you went across Lüneburg Heath.
Yeah.
Mm. What's that like?
Well, woods, scrubland.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Not much. I didn't sort of take in very much, but that's all it was, really. It was like a lot of places down in Surrey, you know. Mm. I'm sure you know what's going to happen when you leave here this afternoon. I shall suddenly remember all sorts of things that I ought to have mentioned.
Never mind, I think you've remembered a lot of things, actually, and come back to you, haven't they?
Yeah.
So you were heading towards Lübeck, were you?
We were heading towards Lübeck, yes. Mm. And,
still no resistance, any?
Not really, no real resistance. Mm. No. We went over the, what's that canal called? Oh.
Not the Kiel Canal.
Famous canal, I've forgotten it.
Not the Kiel Canal.
Kiel!
Yeah,
is it the Kiel Canal? It could be, yes. Mm. The Kiel Canal. And there was a somewhere this side of Hamburg, there was a shoot up. Some brave lads had fired on us. We were in front of the tanks, you see. The tanks were what, half a mile away behind us, and they were shooting at us. And Ricky, who was my new driver, he drove into a ditch deliberately to get down, and they couldn't see us so well. The tanks came up, and I told them that there was this gun up under the trees there somewhere near the end of some houses and a bush. And so they livened them up with a few 75 shots, set fire to a couple of houses, and we didn't hear any more. But about 10 minutes later, there was somebody walking down the road, which a woman walking down the road. And we thought, well, it's a bit odd. But when she got a bit closer, she was carrying a baby. And it got half its head missing. You know?
It's the way of war.
It's not nice, is it?
No.
It's not.
No. It was putting an end to the war, which was the big thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
To Because you must have all been getting rather tired of the war by now, mustn't you? You know, you've been going for such a long time.
It seemed interminable at the time, and yet 6 years now goes like this, doesn't it? Don't you find that?
Yeah.
I mean, as we keep asking, where's the time gone?
Yes.
Well, as I say, we've been here 12 years. You wouldn't know. It's gone like smoke.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's it, yeah. So what sort of place is Lübeck?
Lübeck was a sort of, well, what do you call it? Provincial town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we sat on a bridge for a couple of hours until somebody leaning over the parapet saw some wires underneath and said, I'm not sure we should be here. And subsequently they found a bomb wired up, ready to blow it. And then the prisoners started coming in. I think I mentioned to you there were over 70,000 in 3 days. I mean, we didn't know what to do with them.
These were all German soldiers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, going into Lübeck was funny because the leading tank, or before that, you see, whilst we were in this POW camp on the approaches to Lübeck, the guardroom telephone bell rang and somebody answered it, and it turned out to be the commander of whoever he was in Lübeck, warning the commander of this camp that we were 10 miles away. So they didn't let on, and we shoved off for Lübeck, and the leading tank there, as he turned to go into the main street or whatever, one of the main streets, there was a tram coming down, and the driver slammed his brakes on and hopped out. Yeah.
So they weren't expecting you then?
Not yet, anyway, yeah. No.
No resistance then?
No.
Any resistance at all?
No.
No.
No, none at all.
Mm. None so at where, all. Where were the prisoners coming from?
Well, they were coming out of the woodwork all over the place. I don't know exactly. But later on we had hordes of, well, what seemed like hordes, of young, fresh-faced lads who'd not seen any fighting at all and couldn't understand how they'd lost. They were coming down from Norway.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And they were all singing, you know, and we were desperate not to laugh because it could have been dangerous. They still got their arms, you see, and it could have been dangerous.
Did they know the war was over?
Oh, I think so. Oh, yes. Definitely knew the war was over. Mm. They saw us, but... I forgot to tell you about that bloke. This was in Germany, soon after we crossed. There was a lot of, I don't know what the hell they were firing at. A lot of our artillery were firing over us. In fact, a couple fell short and killed a lad, one of our blokes. But what they were firing at, I have no idea, because the... I ran off my map on one occasion, and I went over to the artillery observation officer and said, could I have a look at your map? Maps, he says. I don't keep maps, he says. I just follow your smoke. So what they were firing at, I don't know. But anyway, it produced out of the woods a party of Germans under a white flag.
Uh-huh.
And they were most concerned and alarmed because apparently there was some dumps of gas shells hidden in these woods. And for their own benefit, they didn't want them breached, you see.
Right.
So there was some negotiating to be done. And I was told to take a couple of these lads to the brigade headquarters.
Yeah.
And... So I stuffed these two lads in the car, in the two left-hand seats, and shut the port so they couldn't see out, and sat over the hatch myself so they could... Because there was no one else there, you see. It was only two or three tanks there. Didn't want them to know there was nobody there, so to speak. And off we went down the road, about 10 miles away, to the Brigade HQ, which was, of course, in a nice chateau-like building. And they got out, I don't know what his rank was, but he looked very smart. And he got out of me, what his uniform, you know.
Yeah.
He and his mate. And there was somebody came running down the path, which was a gravel path. I could hear somebody running, and I looked, and there was a scruffy looking soldier running down there, and he'd got a knife, and he was after these Germans, clearly. So I stuck my pistol up his nose and said, I'll blow your bloody head off if you don't.
Yeah.
So that was twice I'd saved German lives. And it turned out he was a Canadian who'd escaped from a POW camp, and he'd seen these Germans, thinking they were under arrest or something, I suppose, and he was intent to do them a mischief. But,
so you took them out. What did they do with them? Well,
they went back again. Of course, they were under a white flag. You see,
right.
They were negotiating the terms on which they should hand over this patch of ground with our brigadier. You know, no more firing, no more whatever, and we'll retreat. But there are these gas shells here we're worried about, you see. And so they went back. They were allowed to go back. But subsequently, some of their staff surrendered. They came up, and well, we couldn't do anything with them either. Gave them some fags and said, "Well, you might as well walk that way."
Take prisoners, can you?
Not really, not really. We've no facilities. No.
So
I think they were a little alarmed at being told to walk down. They thought they were going to get shot in the back for a while, and it's difficult not to laugh, you know. Yeah. I know the situation doesn't call for laughter, but when they're plainly so, you know, frightened, it can seem laughable, but it's not really. It's very sad.
It seems like a pantomime, doesn't it?
Yes.
Like a silent movie sort
of
strange.
And then we went on from that incident. We went on to an aerodrome. And we were on the perimeter track around this aerodrome. And quite suddenly, there were cannon shells bursting and going amongst us over our heads, which didn't take long to deal with the 75s. They were mounted on these, they were for anti-aircraft guns to protect the airfield, you see. Unfortunately, they had a depression stop. They couldn't depress low enough to get us, because for their own benefit, they didn't want them shooting up their own aeroplanes on the ground, you see, and they couldn't depress them enough to get down to us. But we didn't know that at the time, except it seemed obvious that they were missing us for some reason.
So that was just a few chaps having a go on their own, I suppose.
Well, yes, and of course a couple of 75 shots up in there, they soon shut them up.
Lots of other places, I expect you went through.
Yeah, if there are incidents of the kind happening all the time, it's difficult to recall them all. No, as I say, no real fighting at all. But you did have a feeling sometimes, driving past woodlands, you wondered who the devil was in there and watching, and what sort of armament they might have.
Was it at Lübeck, or I may have got this wrong, that they had the Hitler Youth? Was there some sort of training centre there where they didn't give up very easily?
Don't know about that.
Maybe,
no. But I know outside Lübeck there was a seaside place called Travemünde, and that was a convalescent centre for limbless ex-servicemen, German. It was full of soldiers with one leg or one arm or both missing. Very strange. And it was there on the prom that I listened to Churchill announcing about the end of the war.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you feel then?
Well, I don't know, a sort of anticlimax, I suppose. You know what I mean? What's going to happen now? Later on, and the truth of it, I don't know, but later on, in fact, it was only within this last two or three years, perhaps, I heard it on the radio. It was quite improper and illegal for them to have retained us after the end of the war. I wasn't a national serviceman, I was a conscript, you see. And I'd been in, if I, no, how long? 3 years then.
3 years, yeah.
Yeah, I'd been in 3 years.
There for the duration.
And I was there for the duration, and the duration had finished.
Yeah, that's it.
And the suggestion had been made that perhaps it was illegal to retain us any longer. If I'd known that at the time.
You'd be gone home. Yeah. Jeff Eason, end of reel 5.